Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Well, g'day everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where you can get weekly inspiration, ideas, and actionable strategies to help you provide the coolest, richest, most rewarding, most exciting, and fun learning experiences for your piano students. My name is Tim Topham, all the way from Down Under, Australia, Melbourne, where it's a beautiful sunny day, even though we're coming into winter now. I know that for many of you, it's heading into summertime now. So we've got the complete flip side down here, getting a little bit cold and miserable. But look, I'm really excited by today's show because it's a topic that's very, very close to my heart and hopefully it's very close to yours as well, and a very important one for anyone in modern music education. We're talking today about the top six myths of teaching pop piano. And I love episodes where we have a little bit of a list of a few different things, whether it's mistakes we've made or myths about something, because it's always good to bust myths. And I find it quite enjoyable, particularly when it comes to pop music, because there are a number of myths that still pervade people's thinking when it comes to teaching pop music, which I would love to break down today. So we're going to get straight into it in just a moment, but I did want to let you know that, as usual, of course, full links and downloadable show notes and transcript are available at timtopham.com/episode87. All right, I think we're just going to go straight into it today, and I'm going to start with the first myth, which is, I don't listen to pop, so how can I teach it? And all of these myths are ones that I've heard from teachers over the last few years, and perhaps this resonates with you. Maybe you enjoy listening to classical music perhaps more than pop music, or you just hate commercial television and radio, so you don't listen to that. You like CDs, and you perhaps feel like you've got only a limited connection to the kinds of music that teenagers and kids are listening to these days. And you know what? It's a myth because a number of reasons, actually, but most importantly, when it comes to approaching pop music and lessons, I generally don't actually assign pop music for students to learn. Sometimes it can be good when you're introducing chords. For example, if students are just learning about chord progressions in C major, then it's great to learn something like Let It Be by the Beatles, or a simple song that uses only a limited number of chords. For the most part, though, students will tend to bring pop into my piano lessons, and I encourage them to do it. And you'll find that if you open the door to this and be open and encouraging of students who would like to bring things in to learn with you, they will often bring music in. And so you don't actually have to know that much about pop music, because you don't have to go out there and find it and suggest things for the student to play. They're going to, when, as I say, you open this door up, they're going to bring things in to you. And so the focus of your teaching then becomes helping them be able to play it. And perhaps that's just playing the chord progression so that they can accompany themselves singing it. Perhaps that's just playing the chord progression so that they can play along to a singer or a band on an app. Or perhaps it's playing along with chords in the left hand and the actual melody in the right hand. Whatever it is, all those things, they don't actually require you to have a good grasp on the current trends in pop music. All you need to do is be able to assist the student in learning that song. And so one of the first things I'll often do when a student brings a pop song into a lesson is actually just listen to a little bit of it with them in the lesson on YouTube. It takes a matter of seconds to bring up YouTube if you've got a laptop or an iPad or something handy. Type in the song that they want to learn if you're unfamiliar with it, and have a listen to it with the student. And whatever you do, show encouragement and give lots of praise and show a genuine interest in helping the student learn this piece of music, even if it's not something you really enjoy. I've been asked if I could help students learn rap and some pretty heavy metal, and some of those pieces, I really don't like the sound of at all. Some of them don't have a whole lot of musical harmonic context that you can actually apply in a piano lesson. And so in times like those, while I'll encourage and do what I possibly can, oftentimes the students tend to also realize, actually, there's not a lot we can really do with this song in regard to playing it on the piano. And so maybe another one would be a better option and they could bring something in. Or that's an option time when you could potentially give them something to play while they think of what they would like to bring in a future lesson. So that's myth number one. I hope I've conclusively busted that one. It doesn't matter if you don't listen to pop music, because it's about your musical educational experience and your guidance helping them to be able to play whatever song it is that they bring into the lesson. Myth number two, playing pop is a waste of time. There's no technique in it. It's repetitive. It's boring. It uses a couple of chords. Why would I be spending my precious lesson time worrying about pop music? Well, let me give you a few reasons that I think will break this one down as well. Firstly, pop music is a fantastic motivator and it's a brilliant hook for students, particularly those students who might be on the verge of quitting. It's great for teenagers and great for adults in particular, because they, out of any group that you might be teaching, oftentimes need quick wins because of limited practice time and less lead up and length of sort of time that they're learning things. Sometimes a little quick win can be a great help, and pop provides that for students. It's also engaging and relevant. Pop music is the music students listen to today. Have a think about what is the hardest music genre or era to teach students how to interpret and play. What would you say? I'd guess that, in my opinion anyway, Baroque music and probably classical music are some of the hardest ones to get students to be able to interpret correctly according to the era. And the reason is because we just weren't born, obviously. We haven't lived through those times. So it takes a long time to not only learn the music, which is often quite tricky, but to then learn how to interpret it. Take pop music, though. Pop music is the music of now. It's the sounds and the chords and the structures and the melodies that kids are growing up with today. So it's innately part of them. You don't need to teach them how to interpret it. They will be able to do that incredibly effectively themselves. So pop is not a waste of time in this, in my opinion. It's actually really engaging and it's a very relevant way to do something else, which is even more important in my opinion, and that's to teach students about chords and harmony. Chords are the basis of music, all tonal music in my opinion. So learning about chords through popular music can be one of the best approaches. Taking a harmonic kind of question or challenge away from the piano and away from music into a theory book, I think is one of the most disconnected ways that students could possibly learn about things like cadences and first inversion chords and voice leading and things like that. We should be doing it at the piano. Let's engage them at the piano with chords and progressions, inversions, movement, melody that they can understand. That connection that they make, that relevancy, will have such a greater impact on their ability to understand and retain this kind of knowledge compared to the, okay, we've finished our piano lesson now, let's go to another room and sit at a table and do our theory. Now, I understand there will be times when perhaps a student is preparing for a theory exam, they'll need to do some work at a desk. I totally get that. But please, what I would encourage you to consider doing is making some of those rhythmic, melody writing and harmony and voice leading, those kind of questions, make it part of the teaching that you do anyway through something like looking at chords in pop music. And the repetitive nature is one of the benefits of pop music, because it's easy to get your head around, it's easy to explore, because you're not constantly learning new material, because it does repeat in sections and often in 4 and 8 chord blocks, you can get your head around things with a student very, very quickly. And then you can build out more complex things like arrangements and their own composing and things like that. So I think there's some great opportunities there for students too. And I think one other thing that makes POP not a waste of time is that it helps with reading. If you can make some of those connections between the kinds of structures that they're playing in pop music, i.e. triads and root position and different inversions, and left-hand patterns for that matter, if you can help them see that as it comes up in music and understand that their boogie-woogie blues that they're learning at grade one or two level is actually a 12-bar blues, which is a chord progression that uses three chords in whatever key you're in, and they can make those connections, then they're going to be much better at reading the music as well as being able to just play it. So it is a really holistic thing that has a great effect on students. Now, I would like to mention too, and I should have said this at the top, that I advocate a balanced diet of instruction in piano education. I don't teach only pop music. I don't teach only classical. I don't teach and I don't encourage anyone to teach only one style or predominantly one style. And so while I do provide lots of solutions and support and advice regarding pop music, I'm not suggesting by any means that you should become a pop piano teacher and ditch everything else in your lessons. We all know that a student's technique will be built up and challenged and will grow the most through classical repertoire. That's really a statement of fact. There's nothing like some hard romantic etudes or something like that to get students' technique improved. Pop music's not going to do that, but that's not its point. So I did want to say that upfront, that pop is just one part of a balanced diet of piano studies. And, you know, some students won't go down this path and won't be interested in it. I think it's a very small percentage that I've experienced. I wonder how you would feel. I think probably 95% of my students at some stage have been interested in learning some kind of popular music, but there will be the 5% or the small number who really love classical music or really just want to play music that you're providing for them. And I know that some people think in regard to this myth number two, the waste of time thing, that pop music and helping them with pop music feels like babysitting. And I've got a post up in front of me on one of the ABRSM forums with one of the members there saying, I'm starting to feel like I'm babysitting practice sessions during the lessons, giving fingering and writing in the beats like there's no tomorrow, trying to help. And this is particularly a problem when students have come with something that they've learnt themselves or learnt on YouTube tutorials. And so what I would say is that I still think there is value in the advice, the musical advice that you can give students. You are the experienced music educator who has a wealth of different genres and backgrounds, and you've played lots of different types of music. So if they're bringing pop music in that they seem to have learned pretty well, then give them feedback. Be positive, give them praise, but also give them musical feedback. How about you try adding some more dynamic balance? How about we use a greater range of the piano? What if we add an introduction and maybe an outro? What if we take the chord progression that you really like so much because you can't stop playing it, and we work out why it sounds so cool? And could we convert that into our own arrangement, or could we even use that as the basis of our own composing? These are the types of conversations that I think can come out of teaching pop music. Okay, myth number three. You have to play everything as written, especially rhythm. So let's bust this right out of the water now. You do not have to play everything as written. In fact, it's probably preferable to not play everything as written when it comes to pop music. Now, I know this is going to be difficult for teachers who have a real classical training background, because that's what we're taught to do. We're taught to interpret written music and do it incredibly well. And we do. When it comes to pop, you've really got to let your guard down and go with the flow a little bit more, especially when it comes to rhythm. One of the biggest questions I get is, what do you do when the rhythm's too hard? And should I teach the rhythm metrically, i.e. should I get them counting all the beats and trying to play it exactly as written? And the answer to that is really simple. It's a no. You will turn off students, you will go crazy with frustration, and the whole thing will fall in a heap if you try and get students to play those incredibly complex notated rhythms on the piano and try and do it perfectly metrically with metronomes and things. Forget it. It's just not going to work. So what's the alternative? Well, my recommendation It depends a little bit on how you're teaching whatever the song is. If they're learning something from music and it's very complicated, then one of the simplest ways you can approach it is to get the student to play through the melody notes without rhythm, just to work out where the notes are. Oftentimes, again, it will be fairly repetitive, maybe based on a pentatonic scale, so not involving a whole lot of notes. Get them to play the melody and then get them to feel the rhythm and maybe even vocalize the rhythm. Da, ba, ba, do, da, 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 or whatever, however it goes. Get them to tap a beat while they're doing it, or, you know, keep some kind of rhythm while they're vocalizing the rhythm. Maybe just tapping the rhythm, clapping it, doing something to get the rhythm out of their head and into their body. I particularly like the vocalizing thing. I think it can really help, but I understand that for some teachers, if you haven't done that with students before, they're going to look at you like you're from another planet. But look, I started doing it more recently and it's had a huge effect. If you can sing, you can tend to play something. It's the same with rhythm. You don't have to sing the rhythm, but if you can vocalize it somehow, it tends to make it much easier to play. So take that rhythm and then apply it to the notes that they've already learned. And if they're having trouble getting the two hands in sync, then just simplify the left hand down to a chord on beat one, or one note, or a bass line note on beat one. Whatever it is, to simplify, to make it easier to play. But if you're trying to do one yen da, two yen da, three yen da, or, you know, one and two and three and four and one and two yen da, three and triplets and all this kind of stuff, it's just going to be an absolute nightmare. And I can understand why teachers would throw their hands up and say, forget pop, I'm not doing it, if they try and teach it in that way. Remember that written notation is only one person's transcription of the idea of what they've heard. And the hardest rhythms are always in the melody, right? So one of the other things that I also talk about is getting kids to sing. And I'm going to talk about that in myth number 5. So stay tuned for that in just a moment. But to wrap this one up, you have to play everything as written? No, absolutely not. It's about freedom and latitude. It's a little bit like jazz in that regard. We should be encouraging them to play as they can hear, to go with the flow, to feel the groove, and to have fun with it. Don't worry about things being too metrically precise. Okay, so we're up to myth number 4. You have to learn the whole song. No, definitely not. And in fact, in most times, most of my students really only want to learn a section of a song, and that's totally fine. You don't have to create a performance out of every piece that a student learns. And if you are following something like a large number of pieces challenge, a 30 or 40 piece challenge in your studio, you'll already be aware of this as a concept. In order to play a large amount of repertoire in the year, you probably won't be able to perfect it up to a performance standard. And you have to make a call as a teacher up to what level you're happy to move on from that piece at. And that will depend on you and the student and what other progress they're making, all that kind of stuff. In regard to pop music, find out what they want to learn, which bit they want to learn when they come and ask you, can I play this song? Because it's oftentimes not the beginning. Although sometimes it is. It may be a cool little horn riff. It may be the chord progression. It may be a bass line. I mean, who wouldn't want to play that from Billie Jean, Michael Jackson? Beautiful, good fun, right? But that might be all they really want to learn because, again, that's a little hook. It's a little quick win. They can demonstrate that in front of their class at school or play it at home to some friends. You've had a little bit of success with that student. You've got them at the piano, they're practicing, and with a little bit of encouragement, they'll do some of the other things that you know that they should do and that you would like them to do. Perhaps their scales or their reading pieces or their oral work, whatever it is. So do you have to learn the whole song? Definitely not. Although there is absolutely merit in learning full songs too. So take it as it comes, student by student, song by song, depending on the length of the song, the amount of time you've got, all those kinds of things will impact your ability to help a student learn a full song. Okay, myth number 5 is related to number 3. I talked about singing. Myth number 5 is, I'm a piano teacher, I'm not a singing teacher. I teach pianists to play piano. Why would I be wanting to get them to sing? All right. And so I've kind of jumped the gun a bit on this one. And I've presupposed that you know that one of my big recommendations for teaching of popular music, and in fact, teaching of piano music generally, is to get kids singing more. I've only changed my opinion on this in the last 3 or 4 years after ongoing discussions with lots of other teachers, experts, people in my membership community, and general friends about singing, and particularly as it relates to pop music. Let me just talk about singing for a moment when it comes to pop, because the biggest complicating factor in learning pop music through notation is the rhythm of the melody. When you look at the accompaniment style of a pop song, where someone's just playing chords and a bass line, something like this, the whole idea of rhythmic complexity goes out the window, because when a student accompanies a pop song, they're generally playing some simple things on the beat. And if they're playing something melodic, it's generally a riff or a pattern or some kind of melodic idea that's been played on an instrument anyway. And so it will be naturally more playable. So more and more, I'm encouraging my students to sing when they're playing pop music. And it takes a little bit of time, particularly if you're going to change your thinking around this in your studio and suddenly encourage students to sing when you didn't before. They're going to look at you again a little bit like you're from another planet, and that's okay. It becomes normalized very, very quickly the more you do it. And so I've taken to singing in two main ways. One is if students are struggling with rhythm, and to also prepare them for rhythm that I know is going to be tricky, particularly jazz and swing and things like that, or syncopation, polyrhythms, those sorts of things, I'll get them to vocalize those rhythms. Ba-da-ba, ba-da-ba, ba-da-ba-ba-da kind of thing. And it's amazing how effective that is as a teaching strategy when students can keep a beat and vocalize a melody. Just use da or ba or duh or bum. It doesn't really matter. Some kind of neutral syllable to get the rhythm out of their head again. You could clap it, but I don't think it's as effective. And so I would say, get out of your comfort zone a little bit if this is a bit weird and new for you, and try it out and see. Try it with a student who you know will be relatively open to it, and see in your next lesson when you're teaching them a complex rhythm of some sort whether that helps. I guarantee you will find it incredibly useful. So that's one way that I think singing really helps. And the second way is in pop music. Not every student will want to sing a pop song while they play. But with encouragement, I found that it's remarkable how many students actually have quite reasonable voices and are actually happy to be encouraged to sing. And parents absolutely love it. And I'm just in the middle of, I've just this week released the second part of my pop piano recital blog posts. So this was a two-part series about how I ran my first pop piano showcase. And I would recommend you have a look at it, because I've included some videos there of our students rehearsing and also the final performance. You even get to see me sing some Bruce Hornsby The Way It Is. If you want to check it out, just head to timtopham.com/blog. We'll put a link to the actual article in the show notes today. Do check it out, because one of my students there who I talk about in the article, his name's Will, he sang for the first time at this event and played while he did Billy Joel's Piano Man. He loves the song. He was going to play the melody and not sing at all. And I just thought, you know, let's give it a shot. And lo and behold, he had a great voice. He was able to hold the tune really, really well, and he had a great time doing it. And guess what? He was just playing chords. Much, much easier than trying to play what Billy sings. So that is a really great approach, in my opinion, But I do understand, because I've only gone through it in the last few years myself, that it can be a little bit unnerving, a little bit uncomfortable if you aren't used to doing it, both for you and your students. So introduce it slowly, try it out, and see what the effect is. I think you'll be surprised at the number of students who actually really enjoy singing, even the boys and the teenagers and things like that. And I think you'll find it's an incredibly effective way to help students understand rhythm in particular, in any music, classical, romantic, baroque, whatever it is. Just a little vocalization of a rhythm can really, really help. So that was myth number 5. I'm a piano teacher, not a singing teacher. I'm teaching piano. But look, you don't have to be a singing teacher to encourage a student to sing. And I don't know many piano teachers who don't have an ability to hold a tune. So get out, channel your own inner Mariah Carey, or whoever it is, and give it a shot. Students, as long as they see you trying and you singing, they'll give it a shot with lots of encouragement. Okay, for the final myth, I'm actually going to read out a question that I got from one of my readers. The question is this: I currently put a lot of thinking and effort into preparing for teaching teens that are just beyond beginner stage. They want to play various pop or classical songs that are simply too advanced for their current level. In order not to discourage them, I tend to arrange these songs, either with them in chords or on sheet music, into a more appropriate level. My life currently is so hectic that I just don't have time to do the arrangements in time for the next lesson. So I'm looking for any advice or pointers and resources to help me through. So myth number 6 is that you have to arrange music yourself, and there aren't any good arrangements out there anyway. So it's a bit of a double-barreled one. Let's just have a look at this first idea, which is the question that's been posed here. I don't have time to create my own simplified arrangements of songs. Well, look, the myth I'm busting today is that you need to do this in your own time. I would discourage it, and who has time to do it? No one really has time to come up with pop song arrangements. It's great if you do, and it will certainly make teaching it easier because we're used to teaching from notation. But you're missing out on one of the points that I've mentioned earlier, and that is that a lot of the learning for a student in a pop song is that they're understanding the chordal structure of the music. And so a better approach when it comes to finding and creating arrangements is to help do the simplification with the student in the lesson. So when they bring in music and it's way too hard, help them see the key and the chords that are used. Break it down to root position chords and play through the chord progression as a scaffold around the music that they're trying to read. Give them that kind of an appreciation. That's the first step in simplifying. Break it back down to the chord progression. Then if the bass is heavily arpeggiated, maybe you can show them how that relates to the arpeggios that they're practicing anyway, and they can start learning that left hand. Or maybe they actually need to simplify the left hand in order to play the complex rhythms of the right hand. Whatever it is, I wouldn't go away and spend lots of time arranging and notating music for your students. If you've got time and you enjoy that, then great. But for most of us, we don't have time, and notating things like that would take a very long time. So I would say you're actually going to get as great a learning experience from the student out of it by having them work with it with you in a lesson than you taking it away and doing it and coming back with the solution. And the second part of the myth was that good arrangements are actually hard to find. And I'd like to bust that by mentioning two resources in particular. One is Hal Leonard's Pop Piano Hits. Many of you will be familiar with me talking about these. And I actually have got now some what I've called repertoire rap videos on Facebook. If you haven't been checking these out, then head to my Facebook page. You can search for me whenever you're next on Facebook, Tim Topham Creative Piano Teaching. In fact, if you just search for Tim Topham, it should come up. In fact, if you search for piano teaching, I think it comes up too. So however you get there, head to my page, and if you like it, you'll be notified next time I go live. I do these repertoire rap videos every fortnight, and you're probably wondering, why on earth am I talking about these? Well, the first repertoire rap was all about simplified pop music arrangements that actually sound good. So it's about a 30-minute video of me demonstrating these aspects of pop at the piano. So go and check that out for sure. We'll put a link to it in the show notes as well. You can see other people's comments and questions. And if you can join us on a future one, I think you'll get a lot out of it. They're not all about pop music. My last one was about fun classical arrangements that kids really love. One of the other repertoire apps that I did earlier this year, which we'll put a link to as well, was one about teaching a pop song with no music. And this is a great example of how it was a case study of a song that a student wanted to learn by Eminem, and he brought it into the lesson and we learned it by ear. So I take you through exactly how to go about that approach, which I haven't talked so much about today. So do explore the repertoire rap videos. And as I say, if you like my page, you'll be notified next time I release one. And they are a great reference for teachers who are looking for some new repertoire. And I try to not overwhelm people by giving them hundreds of new books they need to buy. I just choose generally between 3 or 5 books that I know will resonate with students and parents and teachers, and that also, for each volume that you might buy, they're often very cheap and they include a number of fantastic pieces that the students will learn. Because one of those other big problems we have when we talk about repertoire in piano music is, well, one, there's a hell of a lot of it. So finding out some good solutions can save a lot of time. But number two is that oftentimes books only have 1 or 2 really good pieces in them. So for all the books that I recommend on these series of videos, they all have numerous pieces in them that kids will like. So do check that out. Pop Piano Hits by Hal Leonard is one of my favorite go-to books, and they're bringing them out quite regularly. They're around a grade 1 or 2 standard here in Australia and UK, and they are keeping them quite regularly up to date. So that's a great option. The second one I would check out if you haven't already is Noviscore, Noviscore. I've discussed this one a few times before too. Noviscore create arrangements of all sorts of different music. So there's classical, there's worship, there's pop and rock. What they do that's slightly different is they have a team of pianists who create multiple levels of difficulty arrangements for each song in their catalog. So one song might be a Coldplay track. They'll have 3 or 4 versions of simplified versions of that song that students at different levels can play. So the hardest version, level 4, will be the original, more or less, the kind of thing that you would find on music notes when you search for it online. And then level 3 will be a bit easier. Level 2 will be simplified some more. Level 1 will be the easiest one. It's a great resource if you are looking to teach by notation and want to find some good arrangements. So do check it out. You can browse their catalog. You can listen to the pieces, see samples online, etc. It's a great place to go. That's Noviscore, Noviscore.com. So just wrapping up that last one in regard to arranging music, I would also try doing things without reading. When it comes to pop music, because the music is so different, it's constructed differently to classical music. It sounds different, obviously. And I think it actually benefits from a different approach. So teaching by chords is great. So finding a chord chart with the lyrics sometimes can be a really good way to approach it. Or simply learning it by ear. It takes longer, but teaching students how to play what they hear is an incredibly valuable skill for any student. As I said in my pop webinars that I did last weekend, hopefully many of you were on those, I gave you a few tips about using the ear and listening approach. One of the hardest things about it is that it does take time. And so fitting an ear oral approach of learning a pop song into a 30-minute lesson could be challenging. But then again, if you've got a student who's really struggling to get motivated and who really wants to learn a song, then potentially you might want to devote that whole lesson to doing that because it might be the thing that keeps him or her learning. All right, so they are my 6 top myths of teaching piano. Let's go over each one of them really, really quickly. First one is, I don't listen to pop, so I can't teach it very well. Busted, right? Number 2, Playing pop is a waste of time. It's repetitive and boring. There's no technical aspects to it. Did we bust that one? I really hope so. It's all about actually engaging students in a deeper understanding of the harmonic structure of music. Myth number three was that you have to play everything as written, and particularly the rhythms. Forget it. Totally busted. It's going to be far harder and much more of a pain if you try and teach kids pop songs with complex rhythms metrically and perfectly. Now, while I think about it, if you get an arrangement that is simplified and the rhythms are approachable and achievable by that student, then of course you can teach them metrically and encourage them to play it as written. What I'm talking about is when you get that piece of music put in front of you that is just full of demi-semi quavers and dotted this and that and things that are written out of time, all that kind of stuff. That's when you say, no, you don't, just play it as you feel it. Sing it to me and then let's play that. Myth number four was that you have to learn the whole song. Definitely don't. You can do if you want, but ask the student firstly, which bit do you want to learn? And oftentimes it won't be the whole song. Myth number five was that piano teaching is about teaching piano, not singing. So why should I do any singing in my lessons? I hope that I've convinced you to give that a shot. Tell me about it in the show notes and the comments at the bottom of the page. Try it out in your lesson this next week and see how it goes. And come back to this page, which is timtopham.com/episode87, and write a little comment there about how you went. And if it didn't work, tell me that too so I can help you hopefully make it work. And myth number six, there aren't any good written arrangements out there, particularly of the famous songs. So I've given you a few places to go that I hope will help. Now, before I wrap things up today, I wanted to mention that I actually have a full course on teaching pop piano to students. It's called Piano Flicks, Teaching Pop Piano. Some of you will be aware of it. It's an 8-part video series that takes you through from the beginning, classically educated teacher with not that many ideas about chords and progressions and how on earth you would go about teaching it, and takes you right through understanding harmony, different types of chords. We look at technology that you can use for teaching pop. We look at great places to go online for pop music. I show you how to simplify with a number of case studies, me at the piano, showing you scores, pulling things apart, doing things step by step. I also help you to create arrangements with your students. And also in video number two, my crash course in pop chords, I actually show you and give away all my secrets about how you can compose with students using 4-chord progressions. It's great fun. It's really achievable. And it's one of the biggest things I get comments back from teachers about when they've tried it out. It's just a winning formula, which I hope more and more people will use in the coming years. So if you would like to get access to that teaching pop piano course, then all you need to do is head into my members area. If you are a member already, then you've got access. If you're not a member, then please head to timtopham.com/community. And as you're a podcast listener, remember right at the end of this episode in my outro, there's a little discount offer. So you can get a nice discount on your membership if you listen right through to the end. So grab that discount code and then head to timtopham.com/community. And I really look forward to seeing you inside there and helping you on your path to more creative piano teaching, particularly when it comes to pop music. And of course, when you're a member, you can ask me and any of the other members and experts that I've got in there anything you'd like, and I'm more than happy to help. Okay, well, I really hope that you've enjoyed this episode and it's given you some food for thought. My top 6 myths of teaching pop piano, all busted, I hope. And as I say, hopefully it's given you some things to think about and try out in your studios next week. For full show notes and transcript of this episode, head to timtopham.com/episode87. And I will look forward to seeing you next week, or not seeing you, you're looking forward to creating another great episode for you next week as we continue our month-long look at all the different ways of teaching pop music. Until then, catch you later.
Ladies and gentlemen, will conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon PIANOPODCAST for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.